call this meeting to order and ask you to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The roll call of members.
Ms. Robertson? Here. Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. Mackesy?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Mr. Lindelair?
Present.
15 members present.
Petitions, communications, and notices?
Communications are on the desks.
I will respond to one of the communications under the Chair's report. We have no special orders of the day. Recognize privilege of the floor for the public. Anyone here to speak to the body?
Yes, I'd like to come in and just talk to you.
You state your name and
where are you? Yes, my name is Bruce Estes. I'm managing editor and general manager of the Ithaca Journal. And for the last week or so, the journal editorial board has criticized this board sharply. And that has been for some closed meeting sessions, which has occurred. And I wanted to just take a moment tonight to perhaps go back over a few of the points that we have made editorially. Tonight, however, rather than scold you, I really wanted to remind you of some of the wonderful things that this board has done over the years. Back in the 1980s, this board resolved to repudiate closed sessions in which to do the public's business. Last fall, many of you campaigned for a man who promised to bring transparency back to our government. Both of those actions were wonderful things. That helped restore much of the civic participation in both our national government and hopefully our local government. Tonight, I'd like you to remember that championship that you made. Some of you were here in 1985 when you passed that resolution. Some of you were on the campaign trail this fall, campaigning for transparency and openness in government. Those were wonderful things for you to have done. And I'd like you to continue those wonderful things in how you conduct your meetings and resolve this year to have all of the business that comes before your board done in open sessions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Anyone else wish to speak under privilege of the floor for the public? Not, we'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators, but before we begin, I'd like to ask for a moment of silence. On the day of our last meeting, January 20th, we lost a longstanding leader in our community, Connie Cook, who served in our state legislature, and then last Friday, we lost Dave Bush, known as Bushy, who was a dispatcher for Tompkins County for a number of years. Rebecca Bush is Dave's sister. So please take a moment to remember them and their families. Thank you. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Martha?
I have a brief letter I'd like to read and then hand to each of you. In order to complete... to allow a complete revote on the 2009 chair and vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature so we can achieve a clear and definitive outcome and restore the public trust in the election processes of our leadership, I hereby submit my resignation as vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. I encourage my colleagues to accept this resignation to be immediately effective at the moment of a valid acceptance vote on February 3, 2009. I'm very eager that the legislature should move on to the very important work that we have to do, and I believe my candidacy for either position for the legislature would be a distraction from the primary issue before us. So I call on Mike Winkler to also resign as chair so that we can have a revote on both positions. I will not be a candidate for either of them.
Thank you, Martha. We will have to vote at a later point, maybe after all kind of legislators have weighed in under privilege of the floor. We can rearrange our order to consider accepting this resignation. Thank you. Kathy Luce Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like the staff and public, I was startled and dismayed at what took place at the January 6th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I protested on the record, did not recognize, and do not recognize Martha Robertson as legitimate vice chair of this body. Events that have occurred since then have added to the sense of disenfranchisement many of us are experiencing here in Tompkins County. I offer tonight my perspective of how we got here and how we can move forward. I recognize that the actions of my colleagues are motivated by the desire to serve. I believe that what has occurred is due to good intentions that spun out of control, giving the appearance of unethical, undemocratic behavior with the effect of disenfranchising the voters. Since Martha Robertson, Dooley Kiefer, Jim Dennis, Nathan Shinagawa, and other members of this body saw fit at the previous meeting to attack our elected chair, I decided with some trepidation to speak truth to power tonight. For over 2 years now, I have repeatedly spoken here about transparency and process. Others preferred flexibility and nimbleness to transparency and open government, dismissing my concerns. I was not alone in repeatedly and vehemently decrying the blatant practice of changing the rules in the middle of the process. There's a reason for having a process. It's for fairness and equity. It was clear to me that these machinations were being undertaken to wrest advantage despite a lack of a legislative majority. My father had sage advice on how to deal honorably with being outnumbered or outgunned. Discretion is the better part of valor. In essence, it's better to delay action when facing certain defeat in order to prevail at a later, more advantageous time. And so I have held my own counsel here publicly when it was clear that my warnings about legislative process problems were going unheeded. But our problems have multiplied and come to a head in this epic power struggle. Some history briefly. There are numerous recent examples of legislators bringing to this body deals and proposals that had been worked out in private meetings with the former county administrator, organizations, or department heads. These proposals have been brought forward with the endorsement and assurances of the sponsoring legislator. I objected then to these shortcuts in democratic process, and I object to them now. In addition, there has been a growing tendency of certain legislators to direct and devote staff energy to issues they have not been given legislative authority to pursue. Some legislators have undertaken issues and projects without notifying the appointed chair of the committee overseeing the related department. This is not only wasteful of taxpayer dollars and resources, it also disregards our committee structure and our legislative process. That pattern of bypassing the legislative process has only become more pronounced at recent meetings. Legislative process has been flexed, tortured, and bent to meet the needs of legislators determined to win power at any cost. This undermines representative government, the notion of one person, one vote. For over 2 years now, I have not regularly attended meetings of my party's caucus and have stated to all that my vote will not be and is not determined by the majority vote of caucus. My vote is my own. There's a reason for that, which is related to the extortion and bullying that we saw here at the legislature on January 6th.
Kathy, I'll just ask you to keep your comments general and not personal.
I have found that some of my colleagues construe an agreement in principle as a promise. Our legislature's now commonplace procedural maneuvering, including the last-minute additions and deletions of key elements and subtle yet profound changes on the floor, mean that legislation I may have supported in principle ultimately lacks the substance to win my vote. I'm learning not to make agreements or promises because of the procedural gyrations that take place on the floor. When a small group of legislators calls the chairman of the legislature outside the room in the middle of a meeting and dictates to him how to cast his vote, threatening him with removal from office if he does not capitulate to their demands, then later reports on the floor their actions as justifiable, we are in danger of losing our moral center and have forgotten how to govern in a democracy. Some legislators have felt justified in punishing colleagues who did not comply with the mandate of the caucus majority. Others attempted to pressure colleagues to state a position and make a promise of their vote. These elected representatives believe that public scolding and removal from office as punishment is an appropriate result for a legislator who broke their promise. I submit to you that a promise made under duress is not binding. I further submit to you all that it is time to stop making agreements about votes in caucus. This practice has perverted our democratic process and threatens the core of our representative government. While I know that caucus serves a worthwhile purpose for us, mostly long-winded and egotistical public servants, except for Tyke, who is not long-winded, who need to practice our orations and learn how to condense them, I have come to believe that pledging a vote ahead of the floor vote ultimately leads the desperate, righteous, or unscrupulous to manipulate the process and undermines democracy. Let's do a simple math exercise. I don't have to be the chair of the Budget Committee to understand how block voting can undermine the democracy of a legislative body. With 15 members of a legislative body, let's say that a majority of them, 11, meet together before meetings to discuss the issues. Assume that this group had a majority vote to vote as a block and insisted that the will of the majority would prevail or punishment would result. Assuming compliance with that mandate, any 6 members of this 11 could control the outcome of the 11 votes, simply by voting as a block themselves. Furthermore, if this 6-member group had a hardcore group of 4 who also chose to vote as a block, this core group of 4 could control the outcome. For that matter, assuming compliance to majority rules block voting, 3 unyielding individuals could assert through agreement, intimidation, or threats their will on the 4, the 6, the 11, and the 15 elected representatives. What this would mean is that the voters who elected representatives in good faith that their vote counted would be disenfranchised and our representative government would be undermined. That's why, once I figured out the perversion of power that was evolving for the past 2 years, I would not be bound by a majority vote of party caucus. It simply flies in the face of democracy and all the values of fairness and equity that I was raised to uphold. Fortunately for Tompkins County government, there are at least 2 other strong-minded, fiscally conscious, and independent members of my party caucus who routinely have preserved our county's representative government from the tyranny of a determined few. Like me, they have declined to defer to the majority and instead have chosen to vote independently on each issue. For the record, this is my opinion. 2 of my colleagues, Greg Stevenson and Leslie McBean Claiborne, like me, were not present at the subgroup meeting that inappropriately began here on the floor of the legislature at the January 6th meeting. Interestingly, I was not invited to this unofficial sub-caucus meeting, perhaps because I have been very clear in disapproving of the possible subversions of democratic process that could result from block voting, promises, deals, and agreements. My disapproval of using or enforcing the majority rule practice in caucus is well known. Apparently, though, Dooley Kiefer and Martha Robertson, to name two of my colleagues who publicly excoriated the chairman at last month's legislature meeting, think it appropriate to threaten and intimidate someone to obtain their vote and to punish an elected representative who does not bend to their will. This belief and the actions that resulted from it were, to say the least, regrettable. That Dooley Kiefer is the legislative representative on the Ethics Committee is ironic, as I would have to bring an ethics charge inquiry to one of the legislators about, I'm almost finished, about
who's actually not have personal
speaking in the theoretical, and after what you put up with at the last meeting, you can indulge me here, because I wasn't here. An ethics charge inquiry to one of the legislators about whose ethical conduct I have questions. Here's two of the reasons I think we are in this pickle. One reason is that my colleague Martha Robertson has again this year demonstrated her ambition to gain an office, chair or vice chair, at any cost, despite any obstacle. Thank you for stepping down ahead of the meeting with the condition that people resign first. Another reaction to the bipartisan support.
There were no conditions on my resignation.
Another reason is a reaction.
The record needs to show that.
Can I have the floor? Another reason is a reaction to the bipartisan support for lower tax rates. This is a reason that we're in this pickle. This is seen by some as a repudiation of progressive values and a reason to attack legislative process and leadership. For several years now, with the leadership of Micah Plinkelair, a majority vote of legislators, both Democrat and Republican, we have kept tax increases low. We have done that not with private meetings or illegal agreements, but with the understanding that staff and department heads would do their best to support us in keeping Tompkins County fiscally sound. And it has worked. It has been painful, but it has been effective. How shall we go forward from here? I offer now solutions and suggestions on how to heal from our troubles and move forward effectively. The regrettable and indefensible events of January 6 could be prevented by a return to our stated committee structure and process, transparent and inclusive legislative procedures, and the understanding that our legally sanctioned caucuses are for the purpose of discussion, not for voting or decision-making. Our party caucuses are not only allowed by law, they do serve a purpose when used correctly. Part of the reason that county legislative committee meetings and legislature meetings don't go on for two or three times as long is that we get to talk about the issues beforehand, and we do love to talk. Before closing, I want to state that our legislature is made up of citizens who serve because we care passionately about the issues that are important to Tompkins County. With that in mind, I suggest we move forward from here, understanding that we will treat one another with respect and will work for the good of Tompkins County. Later on tonight, I'll be asking for consideration of a resolution that could help preserve class and economic diversity on the Tompkins County Legislature. In the spirit of reform and cooperation, I hope that each of my colleagues will give thought to voting in support of the resolution. Thank you for your time and attention.
Before I call on anyone else, I did review the rules of decorum for this body, and I was paying attention. There was some moments where that skated very thin towards it. We are all obligated to not personalize our arguments. And I will interrupt people if they do. Greg Stevenson is next, and then Jim Dennis.
The notes I made on my agenda to speak under privilege of the floor are off topic from what we've done thus far. I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, you're recognizing our former colleagues and ask for just a wee bit of indulgence in a bit of redundancy. In the mid-80s, I worked at the Sheriff's Department with Dave Bush, and I just wanted to briefly say that his generosity outside of his employment with the county was quite significant. He was quite involved with the Cops and Kids program, which has, of course, been very successful over the years. So thanks for mentioning that at the beginning of our meeting.
Thank you, Greg. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing I would disagree with on your statement about the rules, I think the rules were clearly violated by legislator Kathy Luz Herrera as she went through mentioning people by name and making accusations about those people. So I am judging that an error was made in that rule.
Is there any other legislator who wishes to speak under privilege of the floor? It is my intention to rearrange the rules, the order of the meeting, to allow us to vote on this resignation. Will Burbank and Frank Proto?
I too want to speak a couple of things, but I wanted to start tonight just to add remembrance of Connie Cook. I knew her first as a public figure, as our assemblywoman, as a bright shining light of the local Republican Party, and later as a neighbor. And when I moved into the Glenside neighborhood, it was very much dominated by key figures in the local Republican Party. And I was a little nervous when moving in there, but Connie welcomed our family in there, made us feel very much at home, and many times invited us up to her house. Over time, I got to know her daughter, Kathy, and Kathy's partner, Diane, and really, over time, came to appreciate how much Connie contributed to this community and what a forward-thinking woman this was, what an extraordinary woman. So I too, mourn her passing. Mike, I'd like to speak a little later on the day of Frank.
Okay, Frank Proto.
Thanks, Mike. Will, thank you for saying that. I was going to also chime in a little bit on Connie. Some of us worked with her back in the 60s when Connie introduced the legislation at the state level. I know some of us don't look as old as we really are, right, Jim? But at any rate, she was quite a woman and very, very interested in this community and very supportive, very open, and willing to sit down with just about anyone from any side of any aisle to discuss any issue. So I appreciate what you said, Will, and also Mike. A little bit off the topic or the items that we've heard, and I hope there are a number of people who are paying attention to the articles that have appeared in the journal. Certainly the one that came out at the end of January. You know, my favorite topic is consumer affairs, and I can't let this one go by. A year or so ago, well, actually, it's just about a year ago, I wrote to the Public Service Commission with regard to NYSEG and their effort to review, the PSC's effort to review the Iberdrola situation, and was kind of concerned that they didn't put any teeth into the review process regarding their line maintenance and the cutback in their crews. Well, here we are almost a year later. On the 30th of January, the journal ran an article which indicates that that company, Iberdrola, is after a rate increase, and you've all seen this, I'm sure. I just want to keep this in the forefront of everybody's mind. We're all getting very high bills. Nobody is, if you've been outside the last 3 weeks or so, with the exception of this past Sunday when it seemed like spring had arrived at 38 degrees, it's been pretty cold, and a lot of the folks that are living out in our neck of the woods are still trying to stay warm. I think it's appalling that this company, that the Public Service Commission bent over backwards to approve because they had deep pockets and they were going to do such wonderful things, is now after a rate increase. And I hope the Public Service Commission sticks by its guns and doesn't let this happen. They weren't supposed to apply for this for a year, and I hope they extend it even beyond that. If you recall, part of the concern that was raised regarding the crews was that the Public Service Commission had approved that Iberdrola would do a self-evaluation on their maintenance. Well, I submit to you that it's time to review what that self-evaluation process has revealed. No one, to the best of my knowledge, no one has seen that report. It may not be done yet, in all fairness to the company. But I think it's important that we keep this pot brewing a little bit, because it does affect every single one of us, and it certainly affects everybody who's trying to make ends meet at this particular point in time. The rate increase, the average rate increase is between $200 and $300 a year for the average user. Or the rate increase proposal, excuse me, they haven't gotten it approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. I'll return to Will, and I think I thought. Okay. Leslin, then Pam, then Carol.
You can go with Pam.
Okay, Pam?
I just wanted to let people know in our listening audience that TCAT has been doing hired a consultant to do a study of how our routes are structured, our bus routes are structured, and whether they are structured in a way that it uses all our resources the most effectively. And anyway, the consultant has come back with some recommendations of changes in routes, additions, adjustments, and there are going to be a series of public meetings through the month of February. There are going to be a couple of them in the city. There's going to be one, I believe, in Groton, and I'm not quite sure. But anyway, you can...
Village of Dryden at the town halls. There's two scheduled for the Board of Water Room.
Oh, okay.
I think they're scheduled.
You're not at your microphone, right? So, okay. Anyway, what I suggest people do is to go onto the TCAT website, because not only will it list the dates and the places where these meetings are going to be, but it also shows what the proposed routes will be. And this is a really important moment for people to join in and the discussion on the best way for us to route our buses in Tompkins County. So I encourage everybody to get involved.
Thank you, Pam. Leslin, then Carol, then Will again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. It has been an incredible 2 weeks in more ways than one, but I want to focus just sort of the joy of the last few weeks for me, starting with the dual designation of Martin Luther King Jr. Street and State Street. I mention it because this is just the beginning of a bigger project, and I'm putting it out there to our viewing audience, as well to all of you, as part of the committee working on this through the City of Ithaca. We are looking to develop we're calling it a freedom walkway, that recognizes not only Dr. King, the street renaming is just the beginning, but also others in the community or other people who you think might or should be recognized on this freedom walkway with stops and literature and information about them. So we encourage your input. Please let me know, or information to Leslie Chatterton at the City of Ithaca, if you have names and information of individuals who you'd like, or places here in the city who you'd like to have recognized with markers or just information on that freedom walkway. And that was a really great thing. And I thank all of you legislators and staff, county administrator, who were there the morning of the unveiling. I followed that up with heading soon after that to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of President Barack Obama. I stood there feeling inspired and validated and hopeful, and I still feel teary when I think of just the experience of standing there with so many people who were there for just the common cause of moving this economy and moving it forward. And some of the thoughts that occurred to me as I was standing there brought me back here to what was happening for us as a legislature. And I wanted to bottle some of just the camaraderie and the hope and the death feeling of just you belong and you deserve that we have there, and bring it back, ship it back, and hope that I can transfer some of that energy that I'm feeling now to all of us, that we can move past the last few weeks of hardship, I would say, that we've been experiencing. Standing there with millions of people experiencing history in the making in the United States, and especially black history, was so crucial and so important. It's a feeling I cannot describe. I know many of you have asked me to tell you what it's like, and I don't know how to describe it. I don't know how to describe when the person next to you, who you don't know, with tears in their eyes, will turn around hugging you, or you look across and people are praying, or even the people who are doing the electric slide, or the people who are doing some other dance, just out of joy, from the youngest baby in arm to the oldest person bent over, or those in wheelchair who brave the weather to come out and be there. There is no lie when I tell you that as President Obama, and no, he's not like, you know, some of the talk show hosts have called him the Messiah or whatever else, but it's no lie when you stand there and as he gets up to take the oath of office, what was very cold, the sun came out and it warmed up, and others who were there can lay testimony to that as well. People were taking off their gloves and relaxing. And as he was leaving the fanfare, as he left, it clouded over again. And just that moment of hope that there's brightness and there's so much for all of us. We all have a future. We all have something to look forward to. And more importantly, we all have to help bring the kind of unity and the kind of progress that he's been speaking about in this country, and we all can do it. So I share that little bit of my experience, being there with my family, my husband, my children, just enjoying the moment and not wanting to leave. We went back the next day or the day after and so on. And also wanted to say just thank you to one of our representative, Congressman Hinchy, who all of the Congress people had open houses. And knowing that we all stood out there for hours on end, it was nice to be able to go indoors, pee, enjoy some refreshment, and conversation, just people sharing their feelings and people sharing their ideas and opinions and people being willing and ready to work. That was wonderful. And to see the young people who came from Ithaca, drove all night by bus, to be there, the flags of all the different countries, all of it. It was very, very validating for all the work that one does, and especially people of color, and more so black people over years, to get to a moment like this. And this is just one. We hope that there's more to come as a country, that we recognize that one should not have to work twice and 10 times as hard to be as good, but to be recognized for who you are and the talents that you bring. So I really did appreciate that opportunity. And then I followed that up with coming back here to the Youth Bureau's 60th anniversary event. And we had in our presence here in Ithaca the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, Cory Booker, a black man, and I think the youngest person of color to be elected mayor. Not to a small community or a community without strife, but certainly to a place that was filled with challenges. And he gave the most inspiring, moving delivery at the State Theater. Sprinkled in it just how proud he was of Ithaca and Tompkins County, that he could stand in the State It's the State Theater on Martin Luther King Jr. Street. And know that we are working towards that kind of unity in this community. So it's just been an incredible couple of weeks for me, and I'm still on a high. And I hope that we will end this evening on Don't Take My High Away. I just set it out there like that. Don't take my high away. I'm enjoying it. Not that anybody can, but, and I just want to share with all of you. I also say, as chair of F&I, I appreciate the U.S. Air, the article in U.S. Airways magazine about Ithaca. All of you should have gotten a copy in your box. It is nice to see Ithaca highlighted, however. As chair of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, I will say that I'm disappointed to not see the kind of diversity in people. There was diversity in pictures of scenery and greenery and the dragon from Cornell, but just the diversity of people. Ithaca is a very diverse community. And I really hoped, you know, I sent emails, they asked for input, and I was really hopeful that there would have been some recognition of that diversity here. I know the focus was on Cornell University, which is a very international community, or even Ithaca College. And so, love the article, love that Ithaca's highlighted, is going to be seen by so many millions of people, good for our economic development, bad for diversity. And I will express my opinion loud and strong on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. I have Carol and Will, and I think Frank wants one brief, and then Dooley.
Oh, thank you, Leslie. That was an inspiring speech, too. I share with you and with others the incredible sense of hope and promise that we have on a national level, and that we got from Cory Booker, who, by the way, sprinkled talk of the arts.
He did. He did, too. Thank you, Carol.
And people should realize the importance of the arts and the arts center in Newark to having revitalized, worked for the revitalization of that city. On the issue of the caucus, I am not sure yet how I feel about that, but I do want to note that I don't think that we would see an Obama become president if it hadn't been for the national, essentially the national caucus process. Mm-hmm. And the history of throughout the civil rights movement and the women's rights movement of bringing that fight up through caucus at local, at state, and at national levels. And I mentioned while you were gone having heard Bob Moses on the radio as a commentator to the inauguration. Talking about the history in 1964 and the importance that it was in caucus and through that process that changes came. And so while Bruce Estes is still here, I appreciate your efforts to bring this to public discussion, and I do hope that the Ithaca Journal will help play a role in presenting some of the history on many sides of this issue, and help us explore that part of the history as well. All the more upsetting, then, to come back and to know that we're having this crisis of leadership that we're having here, because I think this isn't just process and this ruling and that ruling. I believe that we're having a crisis of leadership. That we picked leaders back at the beginning of January, trying to center around a theme of openness, good process, unity, and within a few minutes, that seemed to have fallen apart. We seemed to be divided and confused, and that is, you know, mistakes can happen, but in this long month, it dismays me that we're not finding a way, that we don't have leadership that is leading us to a better place. And I think the county deserves better leadership. I think we have a very tough year that we're facing, in which that's going to be important. And so, you know, in the last few weeks and as recently as yesterday, I understood that one of the ways we were exploring to get past this and to assure our voters and our residents that we were getting past this was that a way to proceed would be to have everybody resign and start over. And I call on us to do that. If there are those of us that, you know, our chair and vice chair have worked with, who've been rallied as a leader, then we would have the opportunity to vote for them again, and nothing would be lost. At this point, I just think that our residents, our voters, deserve to have us either reaffirm this leadership or pick others and move on and get past this. So I call on us to do that.
Thank you, Carol. I think Will, and then Frank briefly, then Dewey, then Nathan.
Thank you, Mike. We seem to be covering a lot of the territory, but I too had the privilege to be president for the 60th anniversary of the Ithaca Youth Bureau and to hear Cory Booker, who is truly an inspiration and one of the more inspiring people I think I've ever heard. The day after that, I actually called Dan and spoke with Al Green and said, I saw some people taping it. When can we see it? And he is hopeful that tape will be available, and I'm hopeful it will get public access. In the meantime, if anybody is interested and would like to know more about the story of this amazing man, there is a documentary called Street Fight that tells a very, very important story. Like Leslin, I hope we can bring some of that spirit to this body. It's been a rough few weeks. And like Carol, I think the best way to move beyond is truly to follow the lead that Martha Robertson has done in submitting her resignation. And I'm hoping, Michael, that you will do the same and allow us all to go through a very open process of reconsidering and choosing our leader. And once that's done, I'm hoping that we can then come together and move and start dealing with the very, very real issues that are facing us. And we all know it's going to be an incredibly difficult year. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to go back and piggyback on some of the comments that Pam made about TCAT. Just to emphasize, the route changes that are being reviewed are not finalized. Those are what the consultant will be recommending, and some of us as TCAT board members will be meeting next week. I think it's the 10th is that meeting to review the proposed changes. And there'll be an opportunity to weigh in. But if you have any riders, and Pam's right, the schedule that's out, we tried to spread it out enough throughout the county so that there's an opportunity for individuals who ride the bus. If you check the times, we even scheduled the times, as I recall, so that there's a daytime and an evening meeting in some of the locations, because some of the people that may want to chime in may have to catch a bus to go home. But if you could get the word out, as Pam described, it would be very helpful to have anyone that wants to participate come to any one of those meetings. We're particularly interested, too, in the rural ridership, because that seems to be where some of the route changes could be tweaked for a little more efficiency. But I wanted to thank Pam for at least reminding all of us that those meetings are coming up. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Frank. Dewey, then Nathan.
Thank you. On a completely different subject, it's been a long time since we've talked about nuclear waste in our county. We never had high-level waste threatened to be sited here, but there was low-level waste proposed to be stored in neighboring counties. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has, since 1984, been allowing more waste, high-level waste, to be created at nuclear power plants because they were confident that there would be a solution. It's not a problem because there was no off-site disposal available then, but they were sure that there would be at least one mine geologic repository ready sometime in the 2007-2009 timeframe. Well, it's 2009 and there is no repository. And so now the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is revisiting its 1984 decision by issuing new findings, assuring us that they find reasonable assurance themselves that there will be sufficient mined geologic repository capacity available within 50 to 60 years behind the license life of the operating plants. I could not believe what I was reading. I wasn't assured by them 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and I'm certainly not assured by anything they say now. It doesn't make me feel more confident. And if any of you share my concern, the deadline for commenting to the NRC is February 6th. rulemaking.comments@nrc.gov.
Judy, can you repeat that?
Sure. It's rulemaking.comments@nrc.gov.
Thank you, Dooley. And Nate?
I have more.
Okay.
I will. Ad hominem attacks are difficult. But I want to talk about the Ithaca Journal. If the Ithaca Journal were to do something as Carol suggested, look at a history of caucuses, don't just fan the flames of controversy by saying caucuses are bad, closed meetings are bad, 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 legislature, step up and do what's right. That's not really helpful. For a long time, for all 50 years now, I've been a member of the League of Women Voters, a really good government organization, believes in open meetings definitely. And when I haven't been in elective office, I've been active in the League. I can't do both at the same time. It's hard to do that. But I've been on the legislature a long time now, and when I first attended caucuses, I was uncomfortable. I brought the League mindset with me. I've never really lost that mindset. But experience has shown me how valuable caucuses are. I think I mentioned in a previous, rather lengthy statement that caucuses let you do things in a safe place, float trial balloons, whatever, and get to argue about what a party's priorities might want to be at the local level, whatever. So, as Kathy said in her statement today, caucuses do actually save us time on the legislature by not making us go through things that could be argued out of earshot. And it's not that we make decisions that are final in caucuses in general. We just talk about policy stuff. And choosing leaders for a political majority is one of the political things that is appropriate for caucus. There was reference to Obama's rise. You see what happens all the time in state and federal legislatures. We're much smaller, but we have a similar need to talk about how best to help the county move forward annually. And we did that. And that leads me directly to the other thing I want to say now. I was hopeful because of all the good words spoken about how it's important to mend rifts, move forward in a positive way, that when Mike and Martha were considering whether the simplest, cleanest, neatest, shortest thing to do was to submit resignations and have a revote, I was so hopeful that that would happen because that is the most appropriate thing. it doesn't disenfranchise anyone because you get another chance to vote in a brand new election for whomever gets nominated. I just want that chance for myself to have on record that I would not have voted for Mike had he not agreed to vote for Martha. That was the team leadership that I was willing to promise my vote to Mike for. And when he broke his promise to me, that was the end of that, and I would like to be able to record my vote against Mike as chair officially in the minutes. And maybe the only chance I'm going to get is just to make sure that this statement now gets in the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Dooley. Nathan?
Thanks, Mike. Sorry, excuse me, everybody. I have a cold, so my voice isn't as loud as it usually is, which is probably a good thing. I just wanted to say a few things about caucus, you know, for better or worse, I mean, usually it's just a, I mean, I personally use it as a way to just sound things out and improve things as I bring them to committee. I want to just use two examples of resolutions that I brought to this legislature. One was the Drop-In Children's Center funding, $50,000 for the Drop-In Children's Center. When I brought that forth originally to the legislature, you know, it went through a committee, it was tough, and then I brought it to a caucus, and people said, you know what? Maybe we need to start talking about financial oversight. You know, maybe we need to talk about a plan to not only give this $50,000 to Drop-In Children's Center, but to get it on stable financial footing. And it was through that caucus that I was able to come back to committee prepared and say, is this something that we can do? How can we move forward? And as a result, it's been a good process. Likewise, I brought to caucus before the Fair Share Healthcare thing. That was the requirement to have large employers pay $3 an hour for health insurance of their workers. It was through discussion in caucus that was then brought to the actual committee, where we were able to expand that to have this legislature formally support single payer universal health care. So there's good parts of caucus and there's bad parts of caucus, but you know those discussions, you know, maybe those things would have happened in the end, but it definitely could have been it would have taken months longer. And so it's always a tight kind of balance that one has to have with those things. I wanted to mention those two events. I'm not going to talk about Cory Booker again because Cory Booker was amazing, and I don't have to repeat that. You know, gosh, the guy could talk about Baldwin, Ellison, Emerson. It was amazing. But the next day, I went to the Stay Connected dinner which is the Chamber of Commerce dinner, and it was really fascinating because I went to this 60th anniversary of the Youth Bureau the night before, and I was at the Chamber dinner, and you think Chamber dinner, so you think there'd be a lot of talk about business, which there was a lot of talk about business, but it was amazing. The underlying themes were so similar. You know, people were talking about the need for diversity and inclusion. They talked about the public service announcements that Cayuga Radio Group ran, $50,000 worth of airtime, talking about class, race, and equity issues, and it was cool that they were talking about that as well. And then everybody, you know, with this whole kind of Barack Obama kind of new generation, you know, everybody was talking in hopeful ways, and it reminded me of what Cory Booker had talked about when he had met that lady outside of his apartment, where she said, you know, take a walk with me, and she says, what do you see? And he says, well, I see gang violence and drug dealers and abandoned, you know, houses where people are dealing drugs. And then she, you know, kind of smacks him around or pushes him or whatever she did to wake him up, and said, look, you know, a person, if they only see problems, you know, I mean, if they only see what's wrong, then they're only going to see problems in life. But we need people to see what's right so that we can see opportunities too. And I thought that was really, really profound. So both events, very, you know, different in a way, but it was cool because throughout, you know, it was two different parts. You know, some could argue two different, you know, perspectives in the community, but they were all talking about common themes, and that was really nice. Just to talk about this, the whole election and leadership battles today. I really am going to support any position. I support any action, any position that allows for us to have a fresh clean start, allowing us to just do a revote on both positions, hopefully, so that we can have definitive answers on who our leadership would be, you know, clear of any sort of parliamentary maneuvering or other kind of, you know, political just kind of gamesmanship. I think a new election is just the clearest way to go, and I advocate any actions that would bring us to that point. And when I say an election, you know, Martha's already taken her hat out of any race, but you know, I don't mind having, you know, the same candidates coming forth again. I just want to have a clean election. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Leslyn, briefly.
Well, hopefully, I don't have to be brief. Actually, Mr. Chair, I do want to comment on caucus, and when Carol brought it up, I remembered I needed to. For our colleagues in the media, I personally wish that the discussions that happened at caucus, though not decisions, but some of the discussions, lessened the discussions that happen here on the floor. They do not. Most of my colleagues do speak when we're on the floor, regardless of what has been said in caucus or not. So a lot of the discussion and decision-making happens right here. Sometimes I do wonder why we're rehashing things, but because I'd like to not go through so much over and over again, but people do take seriously that we are doing the public's business, and they do have conversation right here on the floor around that decision making. Any decisions that need to be made, it happens here just as much, and I wanted to make sure that that is clear.
Thank you, Leslin. Will had a brief comment, and I think Pam had a brief comment.
Thank you, Michael. So I know this has gone on long. We have been dancing around, I think, a hard reality. I guess, Michael, I want to point out the obvious, that our decision at this juncture is for you to voluntarily do what Martha has done and give us the chance to have a new vote. As you are aware, there are at least two motions on that will approach that whole issue obliquely through parliamentary means. I think it will be confusing and will not make a lot of sense. But I really appeal to you to submit to the will of the body and give us that chance.
Thank you, Will. I'll respond to that under the chair's report. I have Pam and then Mike Hattery.
That's okay. I'll pass.
Mike.
But just for the record, because several legislators decided to speak and cajole the chair into resigning, it is not the will of the legislature.
Thank you.
If we're done with privilege of the floor for legislators, I want to take a moment and say actually what a gift this evening is. There's a lot of grace going on tonight and a lot of courage. Very hard things were shared, but we did it with civility, with decorum, with diplomacy. I think this is a testament to when something is shaken in our democratic processes, and indeed an error was made and it did shake some foundations and have us go back to fundamentals. We have used this process to share this information to go forward, and I will at this juncture, with the permission of the body, suggest that we reorder Martha.
Well, finish what you're
suggest that we reorder our normal business, our normal order of business, to allow motions related to Martha's choice to resign at this time, given the continuing contention we've experienced over the past 4 weeks. I will entertain at this time a motion to accept this resignation. Nathan, move.
I move to accept this resignation.
Is there a second? Pam McAsey. This is debatable. Is there discussion? Martha.
I would like to request, after this piece of business is done, that since I believe some people in the audience are here waiting for this discussion, that we reorder so that the two member filed resolutions related to this issue also be brought forward.
You can take that into consideration. Is there any further discussion on the acceptance of the resignation? It takes a majority of this body. Kathy.
As I mentioned in my statement that I read an hour ago at the beginning of this meeting, I don't recognize Martha Robertson as a duly elected person as the vice chair. I protested at the time of the election. Many of us, we had a discussion about it, and we were told that one of the things that we could do would be to challenge the ruling of the chair. But in doing so, we would have implicitly agreed that Martha was elected. She was not. It was an improper election. I do not recognize her as vice chair, and I cannot accept her resignation.
So it sounds like you'd be voting in the negative. Any further discussion before we vote? Pam.
Well, it seems a little circular logic when you don't want somebody in office to vote against their leaving that office.
Any further discussion before we vote? Dooley.
I guess we're talking about the substance of it and whether Martha is truly vice chair. And I have to take issue with Kathy's characterization of this. You announced her as vice chair, and if you believe that that was an error, if you go back through all of the votes on that long January 6th meeting, you will find that the very first vote, you called for all in favor of Martha, 8 votes, all opposed to Martha, 7 votes. So the very first vote was for Martha for chair. And then you took a vote for Leslin, and it turned out to be 8 for Martha and 8 for Leslin. But before that, you had already had an 8-7 vote for Martha. So from the very first vote to the very last vote on January 6th, Martha came out as chair. But to me, it's only the last vote that mattered because you actually announced what the results of the vote meant. And you've heard me say that before. I do not feel comfortable accepting Martha's resignation without also having you offer yours. It's making it very hard for me to decide how to vote on this. If Martha really wants that, she'll have that vote, but I think it's a mistake.
Thank you. Any further comment before we vote? Just want to explain that if indeed the vote for that office is in dispute, this is one way to clarify the dispute. Did I see Mike's hand? Mike Sigler, and then Martha?
I guess mine's more of a question is, at this point in time, I'll ask for a ruling from the chair, I guess. At this point in time, who is the vice chair? Or do we have 2 vice chairs? Or is that, I mean, I've always thought that was where the confusion lies. Is who is the vice chair? I say that it's Leslin and Clairvoyant. Other people don't agree with that. I sent this in an email, and I was looking for legal advice over the weekend on this. I didn't really hear back from anybody. I'm happy to accept her resignation, even though I agree with Kathy.
We have a motion to resolve that question before us. So I will ask the body to move towards a vote on that if there's not any further deliberation. Will and Frank.
Thank you, Mike. Like Dooley, I'm conflicted by this as well. I do feel that we had an accurate vote. And I think that Martha has been the focus of a lot of vitriol within this community, within, unfortunately, this body, that was utterly undeserved. It takes a lot of courage to put yourself forward to run for elective office, certainly, but to run for a leadership position in this body. You can only do that knowing that you will, upon time, be criticized. My sense was that Martha was doing this certainly because she felt she could do a good job, but also because she felt that she could serve this body and was representing a broader group of people that were trying to get a more open and responsive pattern of operating with this body. Like Dooley, I voted for you, Mike, because I thought you had agreed to a leadership team, and I'm very, very sorry that fell apart. I'm hopeful that we can get beyond this procedural move and move to a new vote that will truly get us moving in a new direction.
Thank you, Will. Frank, then Carol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You indicated that just a few moments ago that this was accepting the resignation or acting on this resignation was one way to deal with this issue. The implication was there may be other ways to deal with it. Can you describe what
most, I could go through a litany of procedures that Jonathan I shared on the 15th of January.
Those are the ones you referred to?
Those are the ones I referred to, but the motion on the floor is to accept a resignation. I'd like to move, have comments be relating to that.
I would like to ask our attorney a question, if you permit me, with regard to the potential vote?
Sure.
Jonathan, do you have any advice on for those of us that have not recognized Martha as the vice chairman, accepting the resignation implies that that individual was the vice chairman. Is there another way for us to accomplish this? Are we permitted to abstain? Are we permitted to vote present as Congress does? Do we have any other option but a yes or no vote on this?
I think the option is yes or no. We don't really have abstaining here unless there's some sort of conflict under our rules. I will say that, you know, I understand that, you know, obviously there was an election for Martha. Certain people do not believe the election is valid. Certain members do. So I think it disputed election, but there's an election. I think one could certainly look at it as Martha has resigned or is asking for permission to resign, and one could vote, you know, essentially to the extent that you believe Martha has a position, you're accepting her resignation from that. You know, to be frank, no pun. if what's important is to get to the end result and not to have procedural issues, I think the legislature could accept it and vote for, you know, and then Martha, as she says, won't be a candidate. I think you're going to end up in the same place and do it in a positive way as opposed to a negative way.
Okay, that's all right. Thank you.
I would like to proceed to vote. I have Carol, Martha, Mike Sigler, and Dooley.
I'll pass. I was going to ask the question Frank did.
Okay.
It was really a view. What do you recommend that we do to get us all passed?
That was exactly my advice earlier, and Jonathan reiterated it. Martha, Mike.
I'm sorry, what's your advice?
That to clear up the matter, whether you have an opinion of the either side of the dispute, to make a vote on this would do so. In other words, you would not be in a conflict, even if you dispute the legitimacy, to accept. Martha, Mike Sigler, then Dooley.
I appreciate Dooley's comments that it is unfortunate that we don't have apparently dual debt resignations. There's a statement that goes from the civil rights movement that I think really speaks a lot, and if people are interested in moving on, I think it's worth remembering the thought that if you want peace, work for justice. I think everybody's there's an abundance of hurt feelings and feelings of betrayal around here. I think there's no monopoly on that on any side. I think the fairest, cleanest, simplest thing to do is for both Mike and I to resign. And I'm not saying, you know, for Mike to run again in the new election, that'd be fine. I have no position on that. I just know that I'm not interested in pursuing that at this time. The idea for dual resignations is not new, and I would just point out that, Mike, you said it on the radio on January 21st. The podcast is available from WHCU to also assist people to support getting to the vice chair vote. I would publicly be willing to step aside as chair so that both offices could be revisited and have a clean vote on both offices. From the minutes of January 20th, there's a note in your folder. I looked at the minutes, and I remember clearly that Mike stood at the podium and said, I could resign, in response to a comment of Mike Sigler's. Kathy went back and listened to the tape, and it's on the tape. It happened on the cameras. Mike stated that if his error on January 6th has shaken the confidence of this community in our government or in this legislative leadership, and I commit to you that I'm willing to submit to revisiting the election of chair of this legislature or a vote of confidence if necessary. Point of order, Mike, you are not allowed to do that, I don't think. That's from Mike Sigler. Mike Plinkler, I could resign. I'm not proposing to resign tonight. I'm saying I'm willing to take that under as one method to achieve an outcome that is definitive. It's not one method I added to my list last Thursday, but it's a method that would be definitive. My goal is to restore public confidence in our leaders in this county in a transparent manner. Part of your apology, January 15th, Mike, was about that you would work tirelessly to heal the rifts this error has caused. I call on you to do that, Mike. And that was the spirit in which you and I spent 2 hours on the telephone on Friday working on joint email messages in which we proposed to our colleagues that we would each resign and that there would be votes for new elections. I followed through on that, Mike. You haven't. As of yesterday, you were still treating me as vice chair in many ways. And you called for, I mean, you sent out a draft resignation letter. So I don't know what's changed, Mike. You had in many instances said that you thought that would be the best way to do it. I call on you to resign as well.
Thank you. I have Mike Sigler, then Dooley, then I'd like to move to a vote.
It's just two things. One is a question which can be answered later. I don't really understand why we even have to accept a resignation. I think if someone resigns, it's not like we can force them to serve. So
I agree. It's
why this
stupid.
Why this body has to debate whether or not to accept the resignation. I will not serve if I'm elected. You know. Secondly, I agree with the newspaper, and I have resolutions out there, or a resolution which I'll probably move to committee later, but we'll handle that later, to do away with caucuses. However, I'll say this too. From all the constituents I hear from, it's not the caucus that was the problem. People understand that people get together and have breakfast and talk about legislation. It's the deal. They're angry that you made a deal. And that you came into this body, you already knew what you were going to do, and you made some type of backhand deal. And that's how they look at it. They're not looking at it like, oh, you made this caucus and all that to the side. The problem, and Dooley stated it earlier, and Martha just stated it again, they feel like, and I feel this way, so I can speak pretty strongly on this, when you talk about a leadership team, I have a real problem with that, because that is not in our charter. That has never been the way this legislature has run before, ever. Tim Joseph didn't run that way. The person before him didn't run it that way. If you want to change the basis of how this legislature is run and have a leadership team, then you should present legislation to do so, and then you should debate it on the floor. But to have a feeling that this was somehow done in a Democratic caucus, that we're going to make this kind of arrangement, that's what people are angry about. That's what I'm angry about. And now, when people say, well, I think there should be a revote on a chair that received 11 votes here. This was a blowout election, all right? You got 11 votes to R4. And you can say, well, he didn't vote the way I wanted to. He didn't vote according to this deal. That's what people are mad about, folks. That's what it is. They don't understand what kind of deal could possibly be made that would win over your vote at the county legislature level. I mean, are you bringing in dollars to the district? No. I mean, so that's where some of the confusion lies. On a personal note, I've worked with Mike now for 3 years. He's served this legislature for 12 years. He's gotten pretty beat up by this. Somebody said that somebody was dragging other legislatures through the mud. You're pretty splattered there, Mike. I don't know how much more damage people can do to you or why they want to visit more damage upon you. You made an error. Granted, it's a very public error. You came out and publicly apologized, which is more than I see today on the TV from our national leaders when they make an error. So I do want this done with, frankly. I think you've done pretty much everything that you needed to do. Other people will disagree with that, but again, I don't think it's so much the caucus that where people are upset about, although that is how we arrived here. So, yes, I would like to see that done away with. I think it's that whole just wheeling and dealing kind of thing. 3 men in a room. I mean, God, how many years did I have to hear that? So that's all I really have to say on the matter now.
Have duly. Then, Jim, I'd like to move to a vote.
I was kind of hoping you would answer Mike Sigler's earlier question when he asked you who you consider to be vice chair. I was waiting to hear that answer. You choose to answer that now?
No, I'm going to move to a vote.
Then I will just say that it's been clear to me from right after that night when you helped celebrate the election of a team till meeting after meeting when you have been chair and Martha has been vice chair representing us, that that's who you assumed and acted as, having her as your vice chair. And if you no longer consider that to be true, I would love to know how you went from point A to point B.
Jim Dennis.
Mike Sigler just made the case for a revote. When you have a deal, it at least takes two people to make a deal. And the two people that allegedly have made a deal, one of them has fallen on her sword, and it's clear that the other one should fall on his sword, and we can start over again. If the people are angry at the deal, you take the dealers out of the picture, and you start over again.
Martha.
This is a question to you, and I would like you to answer it, please. What changed since we worked together to figure out how to jointly resign?
At every moment since my error, one of the many considerations for resolving what was determined by Jonathan on Monday morning, the 12th of January, has been several options, including my resignation or joint resignations. I've shared that with some of you who've asked me that. It's not been far from my mind, moment to moment, as a clean and clear option. And I believe it's my role to serve all citizens for the public good, and that particular option is not in the best interest of this county at this time.
Mike, on Friday, in good faith, I worked with you on this option.
I agree with that, and it was one option that we worked on.
You were advocating this option, Mike, and I'm puzzled as to what happened behind the scenes in your mind and with other conversations with other people that has changed your position.
I would like to return to the motion on the floor to accept the resignation of Martha Robertson. Are we ready to vote?
Roll call.
Point of order. Do we need to vote?
Yes, we do. It's in Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah, it's in Robert's Rules, but you do make a good point as to, you know, should you have to, but under Robert's Rules, when someone offers to resign, it's like asking to be dismissed from a duty which the legislature has given you, and that's you're basically asking the legislature permission to be relieved from that duty.
Roll call vote.
Ms. Robertson?
I wouldn't have put it in there if I didn't mean it. Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes, with sincere regret.
Ms. Chalk?
Do I have to?
No.
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera is out of the room. Ms. Keeper?
No.
Ms. Mankesy?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Yes.
11 ayes, 3 noes.
We now have the vacant seat. I'm willing to accept nominations for Vice Chair. Julie Kiefer.
I would like to move my rescission measure up to this point in the agenda. And I'd like it to be considered down, Mike.
Is there a second to change the order of the meeting to include rescission at this moment? Pam seconds. Changing the order of the meeting, remind me, Jonathan, is that debatable?
No, I mean, typically the chair can just change the order of the meeting if you're asking for consensus or asking for the vote. I believe it's a debatable motion. I don't believe there's anything except it's not. It's not usually a motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to change the order. I don't know if it's, yes, you can look up in a minute if it's two-thirds or if it's a majority vote. My memory is it's two-thirds, but I could be wrong. I'll wait for that.
Two-thirds for what, Mr. Chair?
To change the order of a bringing a member filed resolution to an earlier point in the meeting.
Well, we already did this, though. At the very beginning of the meeting, we said we were going to handle all this stuff,
yeah.
Like now.
We do it.
We can do it now if it's will of the body.
We have people waiting.
Sounds like it's the will of the body, then I will agree to move it to this point in the meeting.
It's been so good, they'll probably want to stay longer, though.
Okay, we will now move member filed resolution F, filed by Legislator Kiefer, rescission of election of chair to legislature 2009.
This is member filed. Do we need to vote to put it on the...
No, it was member filed in a timely fashion. It's on the agenda. Back to Julie.
It's a short resolution, and I'd like to read it so the public knows what it is. You read the title. It says, whereas it is in the best interest of the Tompkins County Legislature and the governance of the county for legislators to have confidence in and trust in their elected legislative chair, now therefore be it resolved that for reasons of mismanagement and other faults, the January 6, 2009 election of chair of the legislature be and hereby is rescinded. Resolved further that a new election for chair be held at the regularly scheduled legislative meeting on February 3, 2009 by reopening nominations and following standard procedures. And that's what I move.
Is there a second?
Awesome.
Will seconds. If I understand correctly, the reasons to rescind an election with a pre-filed resolution include neglect of duty and mismanagement. So I would like people to focus their discussion to those reasons and then for supporting or not the resolution, and then we'll proceed to a vote. Kathy Lou Serrera.
I will be supporting this.
Are there any other comments before we proceed to a vote? Mike Sigler.
I read the rules of order and all that again, and I'm a little concerned that we're using this for the simple fact that I really see this as being more for someone who's committed nefarious activity. I don't think Mike tried to sell a seat or anything along those lines. I think he basically made an error. And if we're going to start removing people from office for making errors, there will be very few people in office. So, with that said, I hope that people will vote against this, because I think this is a very ham-handed way to go about this.
Other discussion? Martha, Will, Carol.
Was I next? I thought there were other hands. All right. This is... there is nothing in our own rules about removing an officer that's been elected. So this is the method that is stated in Robert's Rules, page 642 to 3 on in the 10th edition. I think Julie can explain her deaf and her own vision of the misconduct or whatever, but I feel that lack of confidence is something that I think if this is something that just respect each other for the desire to have a new vote, that this is a parliamentary way to get to something that I think is at the will of a large number of us, if not the majority.
Martha just referred to a page in Robert's Rules of Order. I'll just read it out loud. It's page 642. Except as the bylaws may provide otherwise, any regularly elected office of a permanent society, and our bylaws do allow reaching this action in this way. Any regularly elected officer of a permanent society can be deposed from office for cause, that is, misconduct or neglect of duty in office. And then it goes on to explain that our bylaws are the one that allow this. I have on the list Will Burbank, then Carol, then Jim.
Thank you, Mike. Mike Sigler mentioned the word nefarious, and that's certainly not anything I'm thinking of in terms of why I second it. And I do think that this is a crude and far from perfect way of getting to the problem. As I said earlier in the evening, Mike, I think it would be much cleaner and simpler if we were you to tender your resignation. But lacking that, I think this does allow us to do a similar thing.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I researched this. Apparently there is our rules read that the chair and vice chair shall serve for a term of 1 year or until a successor is elected. And Robert's rules on that same page 642 actually makes and the explanation to Robert's rules online make a very big distinction that the use of this method is fine if that word or is in there. If the bylaws state a term for the office but add or until the officer's successor is elected, that this is a method for removal. And I also would like to point out that it leaves a much wider berth than malfeasance or misconduct, and that what I was getting at in the privilege of the floor was the last month not getting us past the original mistake has been a neglect of duty. And, you know, without casting aspersions on Mike's character, and really for myself being totally open still to having you present, Mike, a way to get this body past this and still feel like we can work together in terms of regaining my vote. You know, I will support rescinding what we did without casting aspersions as to misconduct.
Jim, then Mike Sigler, then I'd like to speak.
I have a question about Resolution E, which has been filed by Legislator Robertson. Is that resolution a suspension of the rules resolution, or is that a simple majority resolution?
That resolution, in my interpretation, is simple majority. To suspend the rules is three-quarter or two-thirds. This resolution does not require two-thirds unless it then leads to suspension of the rules. So this is simply a resolution about intent. If anybody wants to move suspension of the rules, that is one method. I'll speak to that in a minute. Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to comment on what Carol said. I would find it difficult laying that at Mike's feet, not being able to resolve this. I mean, if people were able to resolve their difficulties, we wouldn't have courts. You had two very opposing sides here who weren't going to agree, it seemed. And I felt in good cause in backing the rules. So other people didn't think that's maybe what they were doing, or they felt they were backing the rules. I'm not really sure, or we needed a suspension of rules. A lot of things came out, but I can't lay all that on Mike that he hasn't been able to resolve this. A, it's been a month, but not quite a month. We've only had one meeting since the last meeting. I mean, we had that special meeting, but I think that special meeting was more a matter of Mike saying, hey, I screwed up. I want to do it publicly. I want to do it in front of you. Here's what happened. So I think it's a little unfair to lay the kind of blame at his fault, just because, like I said, I mean, this is why when people can't get agreement, you know, go to court, unfortunately, but that's what people do. So
I want to speak to this as well. I do not agree that my behavior since January 6th constitutes cause under misconduct, neglect of duty, or any other phraseology you may have come up with in your research, Carol. Within, 24 hours, we began reviewing the tape. Jonathan actually made a determination on Monday morning in a phone call to me about his assessment that there was indeed an improper action taken. Within 24 hours of that, upon polling all members, I tried to find a date for a special meeting, and we scheduled a special meeting to lay out the options. Nathan was very diligent in expressing us not taking any action at that meeting, but just to explain a breach had been made, an improper action had been made, and what the options were to extricate ourselves from that. And subsequent to that, there have been many conversations with our county attorney and parliamentarian about the best way to proceed. So if that is a neglect of duty or misconduct, I stand guilty as charged, and I believe that anyone in this office who would succeed to the chair role or vice chair role at any moment during this year could have 8 votes of discouragement against them, and we could be replacing people on a monthly basis due to interpretations like that. So I hope that people will not use this method to proceed. If you do, I will accept the consequences, as I said I would on the 15th when I explained my error, did apologize to the public and to each of you, and gave you options on how to proceed. I have Jim, Nathan, Will next, and I see Dooley's hand. Jim.
I will finish.
Nathan, Will, Dooley, and then Martha.
All right. I have 2 questions and a comment. First, does this rescission prevent the current chair from running when, if it passes, then there's a new election. Does this resolution prevent the chair from running again?
I have not researched that.
No.
I can't imagine.
It doesn't prevent. So
can't imagine
can.
That it would.
All right. Secondly, what other options are there tonight that would allow for a revote on the chair, other than this?
Suspension of the rules is one that we outlined earlier.
Yes.
Essentially, Jonathan has expressed, both privately and I think in a memo to us, once an election is valid, the threshold for revisiting it typically increases immediately. So it increases from an 8-vote threshold to a 2/3 vote threshold, because in errors of election, people don't want to be reversing it nilly-willy, and so that in parliamentary procedure changes that threshold so people are very sure in their second action if they want to revisit or suspend rules. In this particular member-filed resolution, which is the rescission, the request of the mover is to simply remove from office, and I'll read it again because it talks about deposed from office for cause. That is what's being debated at this moment. Are the actions of your chair cause, and will you support this resolution? I have next. So that's one. Answered your question. Did you get both questions?
Yeah, that's fine.
Nathan, then Will, Dooley, Martha, and Jim.
So, Mike, I think you've explained this well, and I certainly think it would be entirely appropriate for you to put your name forward after this passed and for a revote, and I would hope that that you would. And I would point out to people who feel that Mike has acted properly and you wish to express your support, that there would be a very quick opportunity to do so. But that would allow all of us to weigh in on this issue. And I really invite you all to give us that opportunity.
Dooley, Martha, Jim, I'd like to speak one more time.
I moved this not because I enjoy parliamentary procedure discussions, although we're having them, but because I didn't see another way to reach a revote on the chair. And you all may or may not remember at the, I think it was the January 20th meeting of the legislature when I read a rather lengthy statement. I made it clear in a few words that my loss of confidence in our present chair was not just because of a bungled vote management. It was a series of things during 2008. But I chose not to enumerate them because I don't think that's a good way to treat people. And if you want to get into... So this rescission motion is not, for me, based just on your mismanagement of voting procedures on January 6th. It was the last in a series of things that have given me real pause about your leadership. And if you want to get into that, I would do it in executive session. I don't want to wash laundry in public or whatever the phrase is, whatever cliche applies. So I chose not to enumerate things, and you'll just have to either move to go to executive session if you want to get into this, or you'll have to understand that the rescission vote is not pegged solely on mismanagement of a vote.
Thank you, Dooley. I have Martha, Jim, then I'd like to speak.
I understand that people are uncomfortable with the idea of a vote that challenges them to say, do you think Mike is guilty, I don't know if that's the word, has there's been misconduct or not? That I don't need to peg that to anybody. I just want to have a chance to vote for chair again, as well as vice chair. So that's why I've filed Resolution E, very simple, just, and Jonathan Wood has said, basically, whatever the body wants to do, the body can decide to elect, it's up to us to elect our leaders. No court is going to step in and say this is how you have to do it or not do it, that it is up to us. So I submitted number Resolution E, and it's just very simply asking that we have new elections for chair and then for vice chair. No misconduct, no nothing else like that. So with that in mind, I would like, with the intention to move Resolution E, I'd like to move to table Resolution F.
Till when?
Table until a certain time. Table indefinitely.
Table until later in this meeting.
After designated time.
Until after we consider Resolution E. Does that work?
I think that works. That's a motion to table Resolution F. Is there a second? Will Burbank? I don't believe motion to table is debatable. Is that accurate, Jonathan?
A motion to table indefinitely is not debatable, but a motion to table to a certain time is debatable.
Okay, thank you. So it is debatable. Discussion on the motion to table until after Resolution E is considered. Kathy Lou Serrera.
These are what I call gyrations and machinations.
Any further discussion about tabling until after Resolution E? Martha Robertson.
So everybody's clear what I'm asking. I will read Resolution E. Whereas it is in the interest of the Tompkins County Legislature, the county government, and the residents of Tompkins County to have legislative leaders chosen by a majority vote, uncluttered by confusion and error, now therefore be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature shall hold new elections at its regular meeting on February 3rd, 2009, for chair and then for vice chair. Resolved further that the officers chosen through those elections shall take office immediately. And I just ask that it's just fairness that we get to that one. I understand that Resolution F is a harder pill to swallow. So I hope that people can let us consider E.
I'll speak that I will not be supporting this resolution to table because I believe Resolution E does not have the threshold of ability for this body to act. It only encourages us to move to suspension of the rules, which is the actual way that we have to revisit an election. I don't think a resolution allows us to revisit an election, even if it was unanimous. I could be wrong, and I can ask Jonathan, but I will be opposing this because I think it will occupy a great amount of time of this body debating something that has no teeth to it.
I don't think that's germane to tabling. Tabling F.
That, I think, is germane, but if people want to appeal that ruling, I'm glad to proceed on that matter. But if there, anyone else wants to speak before we vote on tabling till after Resolution E, Will Burbank, then Jim.
Well, point of information, Jonathan, could you please give us your opinion on what Mike has just said in terms of the threshold? And
I agree that typically you have a resolution, a motion, or whatever, and there are two ways to take it back up, to reconsider and to rescind. But those are limited in the election context, and you need two-thirds to suspend the rules. Now, as to whether it's germane to this, to the motion to lay on the table, that's another issue, but I agree, essentially, that what he says is accurate.
So to clarify, the implication is, were we to vote on this, then we would have them facing a two-thirds.
I believe you would need two-thirds, because essentially you're either rescinding or reconsidering
right.
a prior vote. Now, as this, you know, previously discussed, there's the exception for rescinding for cause or fault, which is what the other motion is about. But I don't know how you get there without suspending the rules.
Okay. Thank you.
I have Jim and then Martha.
Jonathan answered my question.
Martha Robertson.
Well, I think it's... what I hear people saying is that we can't vote on E because we would need 10 votes to pass it.
No. E can pass...
I would like for us to be allowed to go on record on Resolution E. I don't...
Well, then you'll be supporting the motion to table. Is there further discussion before we move to table? All in favor of tabling Resolution F to be brought back to the table after we discuss Resolution E, please raise your hands and keep them up. 1, 2, 3. Nathan and Dooley. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That fails, 3-12. We are back to Resolution F, rescission of election of chair of the legislature. My next list I had to call on was Martha, Jim, and then myself regarding Resolution F.
No, I'll pass.
Jim?
I'll pass.
You were on a previous list. Okay. Nathan brought up the question about whether I would submit myself for nomination or accept a nomination if indeed Resolution F passes. I will not actually make that determination now, but I will be incredibly hesitant to do that, because if this body uses this mechanism to depose a chair for the intention, I understand of what your main intention is, but you're using for cause and misconduct and neglect of duty to do so, I believe the public is not served, and it would be very challenging for me, and I believe anyone else, to ascend to this position, knowing that every moment in the year they are under that threat to be, quote, deposed for neglect of duty based on the interpretation of those words by 8 members of this body. And so I would hesitate significantly, and I would be surprised if anyone else would consider putting their hat in the ring under those conditions. That's why I will not be supporting Resolution F. It changes the conditions under which our leadership operates. Nathan, Mike Hattery, and Drew.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, I don't want to support this resolution, but my main thing is that I want to have a revote on both of these positions.
Right.
And, you know, the option for you, which I can't force you to do, nor will I, you know, but I mean, I can't force you to do is just for you to resign, so that way you can run again without having this hanging over your head. I think that it's the best way to move forward. You've been open to it many times in the past, and on at least three different occasions that I can think of. You know, so why not do it right now? And that way, I mean, it just seems like the easiest thing to do for all of us. And it would show to me a lot of leadership on your part. So that's just a request, but I can't, obviously, you know, it's just a request.
I'll respond to that in order, but next is Mike Hattery, Dooley Kiefer, then myself, then Kathy Luz Herrera.
And, you know, I think it's really important that we remember the facts here, and that is that we had a clean 11-4 vote for chair. There is no dispute in the record. It was a clean vote for chair. The only reason why we are going through these repeated circulation around this is because a group of people in the Democratic caucus have decided they will not abide by a legitimate vote of this legislature for reasons which are not valid on the floor of the legislature. So, I mean, that's what forever this is going to be about. And it's on the record. We have a legitimate clean vote. It wasn't 8-7. It was 11-4. And forever, it will be remembered that it's because a group of Democrats did not get what they wanted on the floor, a legitimate vote, and so they're determined to re-vote this issue by whatever machination they can accomplish. There was no question about our floor for our vote for chair.
Dooley Kiefer, then myself, then Kathy.
I'm sort of surprised that, Mike, you raised the specter of no one ever wanting to be chair, because if this passed, people could be thrown out willy-nilly on short notice. I feel offended that you think that this wasn't, it didn't take a lot of thought and pain for me to bring this up. It's not what I like to do. And I cannot believe that this group of elected officials would use this over and over again. I think the situation is unique. And if there were another way to reach a revote, it would be fine. I'm disappointed that Mike Hattery doesn't understand the results of someone breaking one's word on something as important as voting. I understand that you were not part of that agreement, Mike Hattery, and you're free to make any comments you want, but you should at least respect that when there are people who feel they have given their votes and been tricked into giving them, they should have recourse, even if you don't agree with what we're doing.
I'll speak to the question that Mike Hattery has raised and Nathan has raised about my reasons not to resign and possibly cleaner way to get to the intention of some of the members of this body. And I will also speak to what New Thule has just brought up. I reiterate that the threshold that is being considered for deposing a leader in this body, I believe, has not been met. The actions that I've taken in the entire, 12 years of my leadership, but certainly since I was elected chair and certainly since January 6th, do not rise to this level. Why I do not step aside and resign to allow this vote, Nathan, is I do not believe it is reasonable for the public to expect under those circumstances for their chair to resign. It is simply not reasonable. It is not a valid reason for someone in my position, I don't care who it is, to put the public through that, and for this particular reason. Dooley has just brought up the question about interpretation of breaking their word as one of several factors that one could lead to conclusion that it was misconduct and neglect of duty. She's saying it's not the only factor. But let me speak to that. On the record, on January 15th, I spoke to, and on the evening of January 6th, I spoke to the issue of that I had broken a rule, and why did I actually do that? During the day of January 6th, I got no less than 7 phone calls from some of these legislators and one other person who was not a legislator, and I got pieces of information from all 3 vice chair candidates. None of those were upheld at the moment I took the vote, and therefore I did make a mistake. But that information that I got in the middle of the day was not upheld, and therefore I was, and I admit, and I have admitted before the public and before you, and I am willing to take the consequence of this vote tonight to live with my head held high, that it was indeed a deer in the headlights moment. I did make a mistake, and I do not consider it breaking my word. Therefore, I will proceed with other hands. I don't know who else was next, Kathy Luz Herrera, then Martha, then Nathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For anybody that's watching, this is a real good example of shifting sands and reasons why it's really not good to make a commitment before the 4 vote, because things change. Things change by intent. Things change due to the situation for various reasons. So it's real interesting to me to hear people quoted out of context as if what was true 2 weeks ago in their situation should be true at this moment. I have sympathy for Mike. As somebody who hates to stand up in front of the blackboard because I can't spell suddenly when I'm standing in front of a group of people, or someone who as chair of a committee has conducted votes wrong myself and had to revote, as a member of this body who has voted incorrectly and asked for a revote, and I don't think there's anybody in this room that doesn't fall into one or all of those categories. I know that under pressure things happen and mistakes happen. This guy admitted it. I think the biggest failing that we've got in this situation is that people seem to think it's okay to pressure somebody for their vote. I tried to say that earlier. Some people seem to think making deals is, as one of my colleagues says, that's politics. Well, my constituents deserve better. I believe that when I was elected, it was to represent everybody, not to make deals. And so those of y'all that are trying to punish him, I just find it really interesting that this is going on. Mike Hattery, I almost agree with everything you said, with this exception. It's not a group of Democrats. It's a group of legislators, because I'm a true-born, lifelong, yellow dog Democrat, and I will stand up for the principles of Democrats forever. But that group was a group of legislators, and they were not my caucus. They were not an officially called caucus, and I want to make that clear, because I'm not a member of that group, and sooner or later, the truth is going to continue to come out. Why these folks are holding on to this when, as you say, this will always be that vote, a legitimate vote that's being overturned by people that couldn't get their way.
Jonathan.
Not that I really want to chime in here, but I do want to bring to the attention of the legislature one rule, which I'll read. In the case of a vacancy in the office of the chair of the legislature, the clerk of the legislature shall call a meeting of the members of the legislature upon like notice, which is the 48 hours of the 2 weeks, as provided above, at which time a successor would be elected. So, at least to the extent that this resolution talks about having an immediate vote, I think you'd need 2/3 for at least that part, because that would seem to be... You would seem to have to suspend the rules on when the next election would be.
Okay, we will deal with that either as an amendment or, but on the other matter, I would like to move to a vote. I think that this is still a gift. Lots of courage is happening tonight. We are working through a very delicate democratic process with civility and decorum. Martha, Nathan, and then I would like to speak.
Well, I assume, Jonathan, that the... I'm not looking at that. Well, I'm going to ask Jonathan a question. I assume, rather than having an immediate election, if there's a resignation or a successful rescission, this could be amended to say within 48 hours from now, correct? I mean, so that could still be passed with a
Yeah, I don't know if you'd want to say 48 hours, but that part could certainly be amended either by the mover and seconder agreeing to that change or by another motion to change that.
Okay. Mike, it is clear you have strong support here. I think that the public must be even more confounded than we are. I think the honorable thing is, it's quite something that you think the honorable thing is not to allow a revote. To resign. I think that is the honorable thing, and let your supporters raise their hands again for you, because it's clear you have a lot of.
We obviously differ on that. Nathan Shinagawa, then I'll speak.
This whole time, I think I've held, contained my emotions about much of this very well. I'm not sure how much longer that's going to last because I have a cold, and when you're on cold medicine, it's easier to say what you don't want to say. But I just want to say that vote that happened on January 6th, this whole deal stuff, whatever. I mean, to me, it was a compromise made by two parties, and one party did not uphold that side of the compromise, and so therefore, I felt this whole time, I felt for the past month. That my vote has been stolen from me. That it was, that I've been duped. I was duped, out of my vote. And that's why I feel so strongly about the need to have a new election. So that way my vote that was taken from me, that I was duped out of, can actually be given, can actually be legitimized. And likewise, everybody else here in this table, since we're all here, can also do the exact same thing and vote clearly. If this vote continues, if this resolution, it's coming up right now, and I will support it for two reasons, because I want a new election. I really just want a new election. And also, this continues, and as my vote has continues to be taken from me, I have a growing lack of confidence in our current leadership. And that's strong. I can say it definitely more strongly, but I don't have to. I think it's clear. You know how I feel. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll pass, actually, and on to Mike Sigler.
Well, it's interesting that you just said that maybe it was more of a compromise. Then I guess my question is, since there are members here that weren't party to any of this, maybe you could tell us what these compromises were or what these deals were. I think that's the question that people are asking. And frankly, the reason I'm not going to support a revote, and the reason I don't want a revote, is A, as Michael said, it was a legal election. There's no ambiguity there. But B, I'm a little concerned that there's a deal going on now. That clearly people want a revote. Martha's out. She's already said that. Mike's out. So clearly there's somebody here that people are supporting. All right. So I want to know how maybe they got that support already.
Mike's not out.
If that's not the case. No, he said if we were to go through with this, he probably would not run again. It would be very difficult for him to run. So clearly there must be a third party. I don't think that's too far of a jump for me. So I think that this problem will get worse because of this, not better.
I have one more hand, and I think we can move to a vote. Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nathan, I want to say that the statement you just made, I couldn't agree with more. And you could imagine how some of us that weren't party to any discussion must feel with regard to the votes that we cast, because we certainly weren't privy to any discussion that went on, regardless of what that discussion might have been. And any revote would make us feel exactly the same way that you're describing how you feel or could be led to feel. So I appreciate what you said, even though you're suffering from cold medicine.
Would you like to proceed to vote on resolution?
Maybe you could pass some of that around.
Would you like to proceed to vote on resolution F, Martha?
Mike, since you asked, Sigler, since you asked about what this compromise was, Dooley said it on January 20th in her statement. And since I clearly was the other half of the ticket, I'm very willing to explain it to anybody who wants to call me or talk about it. I will just say right now, this was, there was a contest for votes for chair, and I ran for chair as one of the Democrats looking to for that position. It was very, very closely divided, and the idea was that not a power sharing agreement, but that as vice chair I would have a chance to be consulted, just as Mike has consulted Leslin while she's been vice chair. I think that was it's a good improvement on the previous situation. I think it was I was looking forward to contributing in that way, and that's why I was asked to do that. As I said many times, I didn't seek the position of vice chair. That's all that it was. No question that the vice chair had any authority. It was simply that Mike agreed to collaborate with me, to consult. It wasn't a tentative agreement. As he said in the Tompkins Weekly today, it was an agreement. And, the same as Joe Biden agreed to be vice presidential nominee. I mean, the Democrats decided who we, as a group, were going to put forth for chair and vice chair. The Republicans decided to put Frank forth as chair. And initially, I understand you as vice chair, and then that changed on the floor. So that's all the compromise was. Simply that I would be in the room and talk, and Mike would consult with me. And he agreed to that. No money changed hands. No, the highly paid and highly valued position of vice chair. I was going to have that privilege. So that's all.
I'll speak. Then I see Leslin's hand. I'll just reiterate before we vote. I believe public errors do give us the opportunity to return to fundamentals. It does challenge our democratic sensibilities. On January 20th, our Chief Justice made an error, and it did not have to be deposed. We have had contested and unclear elections. There's one of note over 8 years ago. That, we have these things happen. We go back to our fundamental rules. I do not believe this process rises to the mechanism to deal with this occasion. But I will submit to this body that is one way, and I will follow it if it succeeds. I'd like to move to a vote on Resolution F, and I'd like Leslin.
So would I, Mr. Chair. I was about to call a question, but I listened to the county attorney.
Jonathan.
Can I make one point? I don't know how this is going to go, but in the event that this would pass, we then have no chair and no vice chair, and have the issue of how to conduct the meeting. So it may make sense to lay it on the table and first choose the vice chair, because otherwise we could be in a bind.
You just had to do that, didn't you?
Point of order.
Dooley had her hand up first. I'm going to call on her. Dooley?
Every year, the legislature votes on an order of succession for the chair. If the chair isn't there, the vice chair will run meetings. If the vice chair isn't there, whatever last year's order of succession was, that's who runs the meeting. So I don't think we're out of options.
We're not necessarily. Just to respond to that, we do that. The legislature does do that every year by the year, and we've yet to do it for 2009. Which would, ordinarily, it hasn't happened yet, which could certainly raise the question of whether that would be legitimate or not, whereas if a vice chair was elected, I don't think there'd be much question of the legitimacy of that.
Chair, point of order from Frank Proto.
We have a procedure. It's called a vacancy. If indeed this passes, and it creates a vacancy, because we will not have a chair, the clerk of the legislature, Kathy Covert, steps in and conducts the meeting. That's set out very clearly in the rules of the board.
Upon, time to shine, Ken.
Upon like notice as provided above, which is not immediately. I agree with Jonathan's interpretation and would entertain a motion to table this so that we may possibly not end up in a situation of 2 days waiting for Kathy to post notice or a suspension of rules to waive that rule to post notice without a chair. But if there is no motion to that effect, we can proceed. Martha.
It was discussed earlier about if Dooley changed the when the election would
No, it's
be
in
held.
Our rule. It's not in her motion.
Point of information.
No, yes. You were saying that the Jonathan said that, if I understood correctly, that the since it calls for an immediate election tonight, that it would need 10 votes. And I, my, you know, Steve Flash, you know, consulted with us on, you know, with me on my motion and Dooley on hers. And
what's your question, Laura?
The question is it, if Dooley is to amend,
just take that,
if Dooley
is
to amend that, is that what's needed?
Yeah, just take out the final resolve. And then what would happen?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why don't we keep that in?
You're looking
hold on, I'm looking at the wrong.
You're looking at E, I think, or something. Okay, so I don't think we can get to a procedure if this motion F succeeds without a two-thirds vote, which we could do immediately. But we could be without a chair, and that's Jonathan's worry.
Point of order,
yeah,
right?
No,
my understanding is that...
Carol,
that
I have a point.
Yes. Pam had a prior point, and I will call on Pam first.
I just wanted to know if it would be possible to elect a temporary chair while we go through this. Is there any reason why we couldn't do that?
I don't think we need to do that. Yeah, there is a procedure for electing a chair pro tonque. Which is in our local rules. Let's find it.
I mean, do we really need to do that? This goes to the order of succession. Does it not go to the order of succession?
The body has to decide.
We've never written it in, and if it expires.
I think my point of order might obviate the need to decide this, because if resolution F, which I understand needs a majority vote, is
just
passed.
Just for sake of order, I will actually, while this is being researched, call on you, Carol. But I don't want, you know, the record to show that you're speaking out of turn. Go ahead. I'm calling on you. Finish your sentence.
Okay. My understanding is that resolution F includes within it a procedure to follow about what to do about the chair.
That's
and that passing resolution F would then...
That's
we
accurate.
Not need to
that's accurate in the interpretation of the wording of the resolution, but just like resolution E, a resolution can't change our rules with 8 votes. You need to change our rules with 2/3 vote, and that's what Jonathan is worried about. If we don't attain 2/3 vote, we have a 2-day period calling notice without a chair and a vice chair. He wonders if it might be useful to vote on the vice chair, so if indeed resolution F succeeds, we at least have a vice chair in place. Frank.
Mr. Chairman, could I suggest that we temporarily table resolution F so we can conduct the business at hand so that we can do resolution A, B, and C and get some regularly scheduled business out of the way and perhaps have reports by some of our staff before we're here till 10:30 again.
Your motion to table is until when? Do you have a time or do you have action?
Until our regularly conducted business at the top of this agenda
is completed.
You mean just
the resolutions?
Resolutions, committee reports, if there are any, whatever else we have to do so we can get it out of the way, and if anybody wants to duck out, they can. I doubt that they will because
I'm interpreting your motion to table to be, it would be come back on the table after resolution D. Is that what you're intending?
After resolution D, yes.
Okay, that's the motion to table because it's not indefinite, it's definite. It is debatable. First of all, is there a second? To table, to later in the meeting. Greg Stevenson seconds to table. It is debatable. Discussion on tabling.
I'm happy to deal with resolutions A through D. I would like to make the county administrator and the finance director and the attorney wait to give their reports.
I think we can arrange that. Any further deliberation on tabling resolution F until later in the meeting as so described? Martha?
When I made a similar suggestion at the January 6th meeting, it was because we had a number of people who had come for other business. I believe we have people in the audience who came for this discussion. I think we should finish it.
Any further discussion on tabling to a later point in the meeting? Kathleen Serrero.
I assume it'll be met with some derision if I say, we have a vice chair. Her name is Leslie Bean Claremore. What's the problem?
So, ready to vote on the motion to table Resolution F until later in the meeting. All in favor of tabling, raise your hand and keep them high. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed to tabling until a later point in the meeting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That fails 6-9. Resolution F is still the motion on the table. Kathy Lucerera.
I just want to, since we're still discussing this, add on to a previous discussion where somebody talked about the Democrats this or the Democrats that. I need to remind you again that whatever discussion happened in caucus and whatever decision came to, it wasn't the Democrats' decision. There were some of us who did not vote and did not agree with whatever the deal and the accepted path of leadership that was assumed to be legitimate. As a matter of fact, because this legislature has 15 members, that power-sharing agreement really never had any legs at all unless a majority of the legislature should vote for it. And
I'm going to ask that we speak to the resolution now.
Because of that, and for so many other reasons, I won't be supporting Resolution F. I think it's... I'd rather not say right now what I think about it.
Martha, and then I'd like to proceed to a vote.
Since it seems people are going through the rules and Dooley's trying to figure out, I don't know. I would perhaps a five-minute recess so that the attorneys can and the clerk can figure out what is governing here, and that won't delay things very long.
I found what I was referring to, if that's in the call to order, and this was in response to a question, and it generally refers to calling to order the assembly. In the absence of the chair and vice chair, the clerk, within 15 minutes of the appointed hour, shall call the legislature to order, and a chair pro tem shall be elected from the members present to preside for such day. Only during the absence of the chair and the vice chair, the chair pro tem shall have and exercise all the powers and duties of the chair. That's what I was thinking of. I'm referring to. It's not really for this situation, but
right.
So in English, I'm sorry. That means if
to address the situation where the chair and the vice chair don't show up, that the clerk can call for an election of a chair for that meeting. It's not really intended for this situation, but this situation is not exactly contemplated by the rules.
Are we ready to vote on Resolution F, rescission of election of chair of legislature 2009? Like a roll call vote.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Unfortunately, yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stevenson?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Regrettably, yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No, thank you.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
No.
7 ayes, 8 noes.
Resolution F does not pass. fails 7-8. We're back to the motion of accepting. No, we did accept the resignation. We now have to accept nominations for vice chair. Nathan Shinagawa.
I'd like to move Leslie McLean Claiborne for vice chair of the Cottonwood County Legislature.
And a second, Will Burbank.
I'd like to second Leslie Claiborne for vice chair.
Is there discussion before we proceed to a vote?
Are there other nominations?
Are there other? Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm a bit distracted at this moment, but I will continue with other nominations. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Frank Proto.
I move that the single nominations, the nomination for vice chair be closed.
Motion to close nominations. Is a second by Kathy Lou Herrera. I believe. All in favor, if there's no discussion, all in favor of closing nominations?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Nominations are hereby closed. Is there discussion on the acceptance of this nomination? I would like to speak as well, but let me take a moment. I'm going to actually reflect on another matter later this evening, but I want to state something for the record that I think may have come out in some of these deliberations. I believe it is not unknown that Leslie McLean Claiborne could well be chair of this legislature. I think because of our circumstances on how we remunerate the chair, that is not possible. I think there could be others as well in that situation. So I certainly will support Leslie as vice chair because I think she has these skills and could serve capably as chair under different circumstances. There's further discussion. Will Burbank and then Leslie.
Mike, I'm glad you said that because I certainly feel that way as well. And as Leslie knows, she has been asked on multiple occasions and encouraged to consider putting her name forward. And she also has many other commitments in her life. But I am very hopeful that that we will vote unanimously and move forward on this.
Leslie.
This is when I should make my big, profound speech. Blame my husband. I actually do appreciate your nomination and vote. But it is a rough one at this point. I'm still on cloud nine. It comes at a point where I feel that we are so awfully divided that it doesn't feel like a comfortable place to be in as... Okay, now I'm a pretty strong woman and you all are moving me to tears with big words like machinations would sound like surgery to me, and that's what it feels like right now. Like really hard surgery. I had an opportunity today to sit with my husband and talk about this whole thing and say, what do I really want to do? It feels embarrassing. It feels troubling. We have business to do for this county. We have business to do for the people who we've been elected to represent. I want to do that. I or anyone else in this legislature can do that, whether we're chair or vice chair of the legislature. It doesn't take one of these positions for us to be able to do that. Certainly, there is some amount of pride that comes with holding one of the leadership positions of the legislature. I appreciate the bipartisan support that I have gotten over the years. I appreciated the opposition I've gotten in this role. Nothing, none of that even closely compares in just in terms of its emotional toll on how I feel right now. I want to serve this body regardless of what the position is. I want to serve the people of Tompkins County. And I don't know that given what's going on now, how comfortable I feel that I can actually do this and do it well. So I appreciate your vote of confidence, and I'm going to appeal to all of you. I haven't said much in this legislature floor when all of this has started. Not a whole lot. One, because I'm part of the middle of it. My name's thrown around. I'm out there. And two, because I couldn't think of anything that I could say that would bring more meaning to the work that we are supposed to do. I couldn't think of anything intelligent to say, just let's pull this together. So I'm going to take this opportunity to say what I want to say. And I apologize if people don't want to listen to me. Any one of us in this legislature could do any of these jobs. I think it is really unfortunate that we've gotten to the point where trust is so eroded. And I'm not pointing fingers in any direction, but just amongst all of us. I hear people talking about we can't trust Mike. I hear people talking about we can't trust you. We can't trust Martha. We can't trust Nathan. We can't, any number of us. And it's being so eroded that it is hurtful. It is very, very hurtful. How are we supposed to, as a body, make decisions in good faith to represent the needs of this county for the quality of life that they talk about in this magazine and elsewhere that we do when we can't sit around the table and trust each other? How are we supposed to do that? And this is not about separation of, you know, the Republicans are going to do their own things, Democrats. It's all of us. It is all of us. And I feel really strange sitting here and accepting this nomination when I feel this way. And I am going to hope that whatever the outcome is tonight, that we can move past this. I don't care if we have to get in the boxing gym at GIAC. Thank you, Frank, for my tickets ringside. And hash it out. But we got to get some crap out that's here for all of us. I have sat here and listened to folks ask Mike over and over again, Mike Plinkler, that is, to move over, to concede, to resign. And this is just not now. It's not just today. And I want to say that if we're going to do that on that end, then we can do it on other ends as well. And I'd like to encourage us to flip this another way and think of what's another way that we can help move us forward. It may not be Mike's resignation. It may not be that. It may be that all of us who have issues may just have to suck it up and get to the point where, or put it out there with each other in our caucus, in our wherever, get over it and get on with the business. I wish that I could be chair of this legislature, like many of you. I wish that I had the wherewithal and the means to be able to do that. I don't. This is a position that requires a lot of your time, full time. I work a full time job. That's priority. So my appeal to you, everybody's been appealing all night about what needs to happen. My appeal to you, as your vice chair nominated, is for all of us to think of how else can we get past. We can hold Mike's foot to the fire. If we don't like what's going on, if Mike continues as our chair, or we don't like what's going on, we can hold his foot to the fire. That's what we're elected to do. If you don't like what I'm doing, you can hold my foot to the fire. If I don't like what Pam is doing, I can hold her foot to the fire. We have that. We have that ability. We have that vote to be able to do that. So that's my appeal to you all. I'm sorry it's not the most profound speech you've heard from me, but I'm speaking from what comes from my gut right now. And I'm still on cloud nine. And I'm not yelling. I'm still happy, and I'm still trying to channel good, positive energy that we can get to a point of healing and working together, because it's not looking good to the people who've been sitting out here for 2 hours plus listening to us go round and round in circles about this. It really isn't. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslyn. Other discussion before we vote? Nathan.
Yep, I just wanted to say that how thankful I am to be the person that nominates Leslyn for vice chair position, the vice chair position. And as she said, I think it is a important step in healing this organization. As I said, I have a growing lack of confidence in our current leader, and I think that with people like Leslyn and Martha and Jim and Frank and everybody else all working together, that we can work through this, and I think it will be absolutely tough. But also, but this is my nomination for Leslyn, and yes. Just want to say, you know, she's a mom, she's a community organizer, she's a leader in our community, you know, and she's a good legislator.
So. Did you say community organizer?
I did say
yes,
community.
Yes, we can. Sorry.
All right. Thanks.
Any further comments before we vote? Leslyn McLean Claiborne for vice chair, Martha Robertson.
I'd love to get past this, Leslyn, absolutely. And I think the only way to honestly get past this is to vote on both positions. And that's all we're asking.
Are we ready to vote on Leslyn McLean Claiborne as vice chair? All in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is unanimous. Thank you, Leslyn.
Thank you all.
We will return to the regular agenda, which...
Mike, there was a call for recess.
Yes, I know. I'm just trying to get the sense of order. I'm assuming we finished with county legislator privilege of the floor. So we'll, I'll call a 5-minute recess, and upon coming back, we'll, if there is anyone here to report as a municipal official, we'll start back at that point in the agenda. 5-minute recess.
Truly a 5-minute recess.
Truly a 5-minute recess.